you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Dukmasova, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, July 9th, 2021. The headline in the Chicago Sun-Times sort of sums up what we're going to be talking about, or partly what we're talking about. Aloy's coming. Slugger ahead of recovery schedule. Could rejoin Sox in 3 weeks following rehab assignment. That's the celebratory headline regarding the White Sox in today's Bright Ones, Chicago Sun-Times. The not-so-celebratory headline regarding the Cubs is sell of a stretch for Cubs. Sell of a stretch for Cubs. Things aren't doing so well on the north side of Chicago. It's the midpoint of the baseball season, more or less. The All-Star break is coming right up. And so I've been thinking about doing this for a while, having a special show dedicated to my beloved baseball teams. I root for them both. Yes, I'm one of those weirdos that roots for both the Sox and the Cubs. That's a whole other story we could devote a segment to. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guests to introduce themselves. And so I'm going to start with distinguished Sox fan guest. Introduce yourself.
Ben, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me as part of this baseball special. It's Jim Coogan. Normally I'm here talking about the law, but it's a nice relief after 5 o'clock on a Friday that I don't have to this time. So I'm excited about this.
All right. And Cubs fan guest, introduce yourself.
How's it going? I'm Miles Porter, baseball lover, player, coach, Midday Mile podcast host and big fan of the Ben Jarofsky Show.
God bless you, Miles, for saying that. Checks in the mail. All right. Now, the last time Miles is a frequent guest on the show talking sports. He was on talking baseball. Jim Coogan is a frequent guest in the sports on the show talking law. And Jim heard Miles talking baseball, and he texted me. He said, hey, you know, I could talk baseball, too. So, and it turns out he is a longtime Chicago White Sox fan. So I welcome where Jim and I are going to really try hard not to just go into a discussion of Donald Trump's legal problems in New York City or William Barr's reign as attorney general. We're going to hold back and dedicate things to baseball. And we're going to have two general conversations. One about the Sox, one about the Cubs. Let's start with the Cubs. Start with you, Miles. Miles, a lifelong Cub fan, but I don't think you hate the Sox. Do you? You're not one of those Cub fans that hates the Sox, right? Am I correct about that?
Yeah. I'm a diehard baseball fan first. I've always just been in love with the game itself. This is a player, you know, real recognizes real. So I'm a baseball fan first, but you know, I'm a Cubs fan. Yeah. If I'm going to pick a team first, it's going to be the Cubs.
Yeah. His father is the diehard Cub fans is a little weird about the Sox, but we'll leave his father out of this one. All right. Miles. So here's the situation with, the Cubs. They got off to a great start. They were 19-8 in the month of May. Over the last few weeks, not so great. They won one and lost 12 by my count. I may be off a loss or two, but I think they're 1-12 over their last 13 games. As a result, they have gone from the first place team in their division, well over the 500 mark, to the third place team in their division, 9.5 games out as we head into the All-Star break. They are 2 games under the 500 mark, which is utter mediocrity. So they're 2 games below mediocrity at 43-45. Wow. General question. What went right then in the month of May, and what has subsequently gone wrong now? And which is the more accurate reflection of the Cubs? So go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Cubs right now, because at the beginning of the season, I think the schedule was a little bit more lighter in terms of, you know, who they're going up against. You know, they really caught fire in the first half of the season. A lot of that credit goes to the pitching staff. Dan Winkler, Rex Brothers, Andrew Chafin, you know, very solid arms out of the bullpen. You know, the bats would come through and back them up when they had to. Then for some reason after the no-hitter, I don't know if it was some complacency going on. They just fell off. Non-competitive at-bats, non-competitive pitches, the starters getting shelled. Jake Arrieta is having a hard time now. He's on the 10-day IL. Things just went kind of weird. But prior to the season starting, you know, the Cubs were kind of sellers. Now we're looking at Kyle Schwarber having an amazing year. Yu Darvish finding so much success in San Diego, along with Victor Caratini. It's all coming back to kind of bite us. And it's no offense to Jock Peterson, but when you look at what Kyle Schwarber has done in Washington this year, you know, it kind of shows that, you know, the Cubs have kind of – they're going into this season kind of like, you know what, if we win, great. If we don't, you know, that'll give us a reason to ship a few guys.
And what do you think is the more accurate portrait of the team? The team that was 19-8 in May, or the team that's been 1-12 over the last week or so?
I think right now is a little bit more of what Jed Hoyer and that entire team is expected of the Cubs right now. Not to this extent, not losing this many games in a row. Granted, as the time of this podcast, they're winning right now. But I think right now is what the front office expected more of the Cubs, as opposed to how hot they got in May. I think this is a little bit more realistic of what we're supposed to expect from the Cubs. This is really not a deep team at the moment, but that's not to say that they're not able to compete down the line. But statistically, if you look at the trends of what's been going on with this team, it's really not looking good.
Jim, your assessment is watching it from the South Side as a Sox fan. 19-8 in May, 1-12 right now. Which one is, you think, more true to who the Cubs really are?
Well, one thing that I think is that I think Miles was kind of touching on is going into the season, it's incumbent upon the management to do self scouting. You know, they're looking at this team and they're trying to make decisions. Is it a contending team? Do they have the kind of reserves and depth that they're going to need? What kind of a team are we trying to put on the field? And then where might we be in the middle of July when all of a sudden you're talking about whether you need to add something or you can sell? So they were already in a position where, and I think this is, it is a very interesting team to discuss for these reasons, because they're very top heavy and those guys at the top are very expensive. So you are definitely going to be, the Cubs management knew they were going to be in this position circa 2021 about, like, are we keeping Javi Baez long-term? Are we keeping Chris Bryant long-term? Are we keeping Wilson Contreras long-term and Anthony Rizzo? And those are the big four guys. And not only are those the big four guys, but most Cub fans couldn't tell you too many more players on the roster beyond that. I mean, besides pitching staff, they might know Kyle Hendricks. They probably know a couple of other starters. But it's not a team that, you know, they really didn't build those other positions up now. And some of this is cyclical stuff. You know, you have guys coming out of your organization to fill in those places. Cubs aren't at that part of the cycle now. They built this team six, seven years ago. And they got a World Series out of it, but now here you are. And it's also very tough, because at one point, a guy like Chris Bryant was looking like he was headed to the Hall of Fame, or at least definitely a perennial All-Star. And then he struggles through some injuries, and now it's a question of, can you afford whatever it's going to cost a lot no matter what, because his agent is Scott Boras. So you're faced with, they knew they had a lot of tough decisions. So, I mean, if you're the Cubs management and the team stumbles into the trade deadline, it does create a good excuse structure to say, look, we got to make some hard decisions and now's the time to do it. And, you know, I will confess that, and I'm even a big enough baseball geek to be in a fantasy baseball league that I've been with some, you know, college friends for 20 years now. 20 years, that's a little scary. but I didn't even know most of their bullpen arms besides their closer. I just didn't know who these guys were because wasn't watching them that carefully last season. But their starting pitching staff, I don't know how, if they were trying to decide what this season was going to look like, I don't think they really could have expected that they would be contending with this group.
Yeah.
Hendricks is a guy who will be in there and he's going to battle and he's going to win today. I don't know if you included that in the tragic statistics or the record list for the Cubs that they're on track to win this afternoon, at least against the Cardinals. But besides Hendricks, it's brutal.
Yeah.
The rest of these guys, their ERAs are in the mid to high fours, fives, sixes. They're throwing guys out there. And then what you're seeing around the league, including with the Sox, have been very lucky with their starting pitching staff. But after the weird season last year, depth has become critical.
Yeah.
And the Cubs didn't have any starting pitching depth. And the guys that are running out there, like Arrieta and Trevor Williams and some of these other guys, they're just not competitive is the problem. It's kind of amazing that they won some of the games that they won, but they were tight games and they were winning close games and holding leads with, their bullpen had some kind of crazy stretch of 20 innings or something without giving up a run. So that's great, but you probably can't really count on that. And the bullpen only comes into play if you grab a lead by the fourth or fifth or sixth inning.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what.
I mean, to me, I think they're going to be happy, at least in the general manager's office, that they've got an opportunity to try to get something out of the loss of these players, or at least trade one or two of them and grab something meaningful to start rebuilding for the next team.
Well, I could tell you as a longtime Cub fan, it is not that unusual for the Cubs to surprise fans and delight fans with a great start and then a total collapse. And the year, I think it was people talk about 69, but I think it was 1979, where they were 25 games over the 500 mark. I remember this. And I remember Lou Boudreau, who used to do radio, and Vince Lloyd. I was listening to the game because that's what I did. And they go, well, the Cubs won tonight. They're 25 games over the 500 mark. And then he said, if this keeps up, they could finish the season at 500. That was such a Cub attitude to have, because of course this won't happen. Of course, there'll be a total collapse and there'll be 500. And what? That's a great year. All right, Miles, I was with you the night the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. We were both jubilant. What a time. And I know you have tremendous loyalty and reverence for the players that Jim just alluded to, who are a key part of that 2016 championship team. Now take the Cub fan out of you and put the general manager in you. Is Chris Bryant worth a long-term multi-gazillion dollar contract, in your humble opinion?
So I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no just because of the history of the injuries, statistically his trends, with what's been going on with him and the Cubs in the past few years. And I know 2020 was a bit of a rough year for everyone, not just including baseball players. But I look at his stats that year, and I look at his injury history the years before that. It just doesn't add up well to me. It doesn't sit well with me. I don't know how much more this is going to work for the Cubs in general, from a standpoint of, I don't know how healthy Chris Bryant can stay. I don't know how well he's going to play when he is healthy. It's kind of a toss up in the air. I think Jim made a great point, is that at one point he was on pace, in my opinion, to be such a Hall of Fame player. At this point, it's really kind of up in the air with Chris Bryant. Whenever Chris Bryant gets hurt, Benny J, he's out for for a period of time. If he gets bumped in the shoulder, he's out for 2 weeks. Take it very easy on him. He needs time to heal. Wilson Contreras, by the way, he got hit in the head today by 98 miles per hour, got up, and it was just like, all right, cool, let's keep playing.
Yeah.
If Chris Bryant gets hit in the shoulder.
Wilson Contreras is amazing.
Wilson Contreras, I don't want him to go. I love him. If Chris Bryant gets hit by a changeup at 82 miles per hour in the ankle, he's gone for 3 weeks, and they have to rehab to get him back maybe by September. The point is that he's very injury prone, and that's what really makes me nervous when it comes to Chris Bryant. Financially, I don't think that's worth it. I don't really think you can build around that. Granted, he'd be a great leader to younger players coming up, but I don't think that's a player exactly that you could build around. I think he's the kind of guy that you can give to a competing team and get back some prospects in return of, you know, 2-3 years down the line.
In retrospect, do you wish they had kept Schwarber? As opposed to Chris Bryant. In other words, kept Schwarber with the idea that just going to let Bryant go this year. Schwarber, by the way, I want to point out, is on the disabled list as well. Is another guy, you look at him, he gets hurt. sort of like Kirk Heinrich, my beloved Bulls. Somehow he walks off the court, and then the next day I read in the paper, he's on the 10-day. I didn't even see him get injured. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on that Bulls tangent. I could not help myself. So Schwarber or Bryant, question to you, Miles. Jim, you're on deck with the same question. Go ahead, Miles.
So that's tricky because I think Kyle Schwarber's leave to another team, I think it was warranted. I guess if I'm looking at right now, I would have rather have kept Kyle Schwarber. Granted, I love both of these players dearly. This is a very difficult question for me. I'm not going to lie. But it's just like, I think you know, if we would have gave Bryant to another team during the offseason, I think we would have been able to bring in a little bit more just because his value, his trade value, I think is still very, very high. So if, instead of giving up Yu Darvish and Victor Caratini and keeping Schwarber along with those two players I just named, we could give Chris Bryant to another competing team and get back something in return. And I also think that we compete a little bit more this year than, you know, we would otherwise.
Well, yeah, I mean, the key with that is you're looking at so he's 29 years old. I had to look it up. I wasn't sure. I thought he might be a little younger than that, but apparently not. So this is one of those, it's the middle to almost 30 contract where they're going to be looking for a 7-8 year deal. I don't know if they're going to find it in the league, but if the market's going to pay for that somewhere, obviously that's what they're going to shoot for. And that's going to be somewhere in the $25 million a year range. So it's, you know, like the money is kind of a funny thing when it comes to baseball. It's not a salary cap question. So when teams want to talk about how much they can spend on a player, it's always kind of like a little bit disingenuous. It's more about how much they can afford and allocation of resources. Because if, for example, if the team's ready to compete again next year, if they reload a little bit, they probably are trying to go find, you know, a free agent pitcher to add something to this group, because I'm not really sure where else they're going to get the rest of a rotation for 2022, you know, assuming they're headed in this direction and they're not competing by the end of the season. So it would make sense that he's the guy who's the most valuable out of that group, you know, compared to Javier Baez. He probably has more value. Baez is in kind of a different spot. He's more, you know, he kind of is what he is. I don't think he's really going to get better than what he is, but he can still, he's still a dangerous hitter and he's a good fielder and he's certainly an entertaining player. I mean, he's fun to watch. And then the question, then it really becomes, where are they going? I was just, while we were listening or talking about this, I'm clicking on other teams' rosters to figure out who's looking for a third baseman. I guess he could play left field depending on where he's at. You know, the Yankees, Gio Urshela's having an okay season, but he's not hitting for power. He's not a bad third baseman. I think they still think he's probably the future of that position, at least for the next year or two. So do they want him? I don't know what the market is. And that's obviously critical. It really depends on, I have no doubt that Jed Hoyer is in the process of trying to figure out who my target is here, who needs a third baseman. I mean, the Oakland A's, Chapman has been a good third baseman for the last couple of years, but he's been terrible this season for most of the year. I know that because he's on my fantasy baseball team and it's been brutal. And Oakland's good. I mean, Oakland's, they're hanging in there with Houston. They've been a wild card team or in the playoffs almost every year. It's kind of crazy because you don't really think about them because I don't think they've been to a World Series, but they're always around competitiveness. So maybe that's a place that he could go because I guess it's more likely they'd send him to an American League team anyway. But,
yeah,
I mean, he's probably their most valuable asset, especially if they decide Rizzo's kind of like a lifer here and Contreras is kind of a lifer here, then Bryant's your guy.
I actually disagree with that point. If you're blowing up the Cubs, and I'm not ready to concede that, we'll get to that. But if you're blowing up the Cubs, in my humble opinion, the relief pitcher, Kimbrel, is your prop's most valuable asset because any contending team, any team that's thinking about going into the playoff, you know how the playoffs work in baseball now. It's much like NBA. It's just a long haul. You get hot pitching. They go to the short. They're pulling the pitchers after three or four innings. You need a closer. And I would say Kimbrel right now is one of the best, if not the best, closers in baseball. The White Sox got a pretty good one, too. And I would say he, much the way the Cubs traded away a lot of talent to get Chapman. I don't know if you guys remember this. What was it, 2016? Of course you remember this. It's the reason the Cubs won the World Series, even though Matt did absolutely everything he could to misuse Chapman in the World Series. So I think Kimbrel would have the most value. But here's my question, and I'll put it to you, Miles. The Cubs, right now we're working from the assumption that the Cubs will be sellers because they are 1-12 dismal. They've got the Cardinals in town right now. You say they're leading. As soon as you said that, that old Cub fan of me started getting excited again. They're winning. My beloved Cubs are going to go. So if the Cubs sweep the Cardinals and go into the All-Star break with three wins in a row, one game over the 500 mark at 46-45, on Monday morning, do you decide you're a seller or a buyer? Go ahead, Miles.
I'm still selling until we can prove that we can compete against teams that we need to beat. The Cardinals are in the same position as the Cubs. The Cardinals are worse. I expect you to beat the Cardinals. They're worse than the Cubs. Going into the series, they had the same exact record. Now we're a game better than them. You need to prove to me, okay? Now, I know I might be you need to prove to me that you can catch the Reds. We let the Reds, the Cincinnati Reds, pass us in the division. They're in second place. Now, you got to prove to me that you can compete with them, that when the Brewers come to town and when we go to Milwaukee, you got to prove to me you can compete against these teams as well. You need to beat the teams that you need to beat. Like, you know, the Cardinals to me is – I'm not thinking about the Cardinals because they suck. They're not good. And Nolan Arenado is my favorite player. He's who I try to model myself after as a player. But the Cardinals aren't good. This is a team I'm expecting you to beat. This is not a team that I'm looking at down the line that's going to be like, oh, we got to – no, it's clearly going to be the Brewers. We have to catch the Reds first. Then we have to work our way up to at least get a wild card spot. Beat the teams that are going to make an impact on us in the future. Beat the teams that are going that we're going to see down the line that are going to determine how we're going to do in the playoffs. The teams that are going to determine our fate for the 2021 season. The Cardinals, whatever. All right, cool. I'm expecting them to sweep them this series. Great. You know, let's focus on the teams that are going to, you know, really hurt us.
All right. By the way, you talked me out of my insanity. I'm with you 100%. It's pathetic. just so pathetic that like we like catch the Reds. Are you kidding me? The Reds? They were catching the Reds? I mean, it just shows you how far the Cubs have fallen. And I understand that when the season began, folks thought we would be behind the Reds anyway. So I guess the Cubs are where they are. All right, let's switch to the White Sox. Enough talking about the Cubs. So depressing. I'm going to have to start day drinking. The Chicago White Sox, also my beloved team. Jim's. I don't know what that is, but it's some kind of White Sox artifact.
It's like a team.
Okay.
And I'm a trial lawyer. I have to have visual aids and demonstrative exhibits.
No,
it's how you deliver a message.
I tell you, folks, it's including the picture on the wall, the 2005 championship White Sox. It's been a while for them, too, since they won. All right, the Sox, as I speak, are 51-35 in first place. 7.5 games and ahead of the second place team. And I am really feeling good about the White Sox. They've done this despite the fact that injuries up and down the lineup all season long. And so I'm feeling really excited about the White Sox. So I'm going to pose the question to you, Jim, as a White Sox fan and our White Sox expert. And then, Miles, you're on deck. Not too long ago, I was at Miles' house, and a boisterous argument broke out between two of my dearest friends, one of whom is Miles' father. The other is Norm. And they were yelling at each other. I think, Miles, you were in the room. They got into it. It was all friendly argument, but it was passionate. I can't remember who was which position, which one took. One person said that if the White Sox have any success, it'll be because of Tony La Russa's expertise, his years, 40-odd years in baseball, et cetera, and so forth. And the other person, just as vehemently and just as passionately and just as loud and at the freaking same time as the other one, so you couldn't really hear what either guy was saying, said any success the White Sox have will be despite Tony La Russa. Because despite the fact that he's old and over the hill and doesn't understand baseball as it's being played today. So Jim Coogan, no ducking, no dodging. The Chicago White Sox success at this point, is it because of Tony La Russa or despite Tony La Russa?
All right. So when they made the announcement that they were hiring him to be their manager, I'm going to say this on the record. I wasn't really excited about it. I had some serious trepidations. Number one, he'd been out of the game for several years. Number two, I'm not a huge fan of like the old school unwritten rules baseball guy. I think some of that's a little like the baseball police. I think that that's kind of ridiculous. You know, you do this, you don't do that. Some of it's arbitrary and very subjective as to what's dishonoring the game or what's sportsmanship to those people. And then you also have a situation where what I was concerned about was a big culture clash. You have that guy with a young, vibrant team that's got a lot of Cuban players, and not like the Cardinals looked in 2007, basically. So I was concerned. And then you have the episodes with the issues with choosing whether or not you could substitute for the base runner and the overtime rules that are, again, they are sort of, they're not arcane, they're new, but they're sort of specific. And if you didn't really pay attention to that, I guess you might not know. Maybe that's not the end of the world. The whole flap with Your Mean Mercedes was about those baseball-y rules about, well, if you're up 10, you don't swing at a 3-0 pitch, and you certainly don't swing for a home run on a 3-0 pitch. If people remember, that happened back in, I want to say, like the beginning of May, and he hits a home run, in a game that they were already winning by enough that it was a position player that was coming in to pitch. It was that catcher for the Twins. So, and that didn't look great because you have Tony coming out and throwing his own player under the bus in the postgame interview. And then basically as a fan, I'm feeling like this reaffirms all of the concerns that I had, that there'd be a culture clash, that the team wouldn't be there with him, that he wouldn't understand, or he would kind of want to impose his own views on a team that was kind of already in place. I mean, most other than adding Lance Lynn, the team was basically already there as of last season. And I think a lot of credit goes to Ricky Renteria for developing some of these guys and getting them in the right places so they can develop confidence and play well. And other than really Jose Abreu and the rest of these guys, were a lot of guys who needed a lot of development to get to this spot. I mean, I would take Jimenez out of that because there was always an expectation they'd be a great hitter and not a good fielder. We can talk about him later. But I just want to add one thing. At this point in the season, I've noticed a few things, and I kind of look at body language. I mentioned I can't help but preface things by talking about legal stuff. I mean, we look at body language of jurors. We look at body language of witnesses when we're trying to figure out things and figure out what the truth is. At the conclusion of some of these wins, I'm seeing Tony giving big hugs, and they're reciprocated from Tim Anderson, from Your Mean Mercedes. I mean, they sent him back down right now because he really started to fall off after having a red hot start to the season, kind of out of nowhere. I think he was 8 for 8 for his first 8 major league at bats. but other guys too, they're it looks genuine. I mean, it looks like they're really, he's actually having some fun and they're having fun. And actually the other one was the other night. I don't know if you guys watched this, but the game in Minnesota where it's pretty driving rain by the end of the game, Liam Hendricks comes in to close it out. He gets the first guy. I think he struck him out. I can't remember now. But then the second batter he faced drives one left center to the warning track.
Billy Hamilton.
Backup outfielder Billy Hamilton, who's played a lot of games because of all the White Sox outfield injuries, makes a spectacular catch. Diving in the mud, he gets up in his uniform looking like he's, you know, out on Soldier Field playing on Sunday. And as they're giving each other high fives, big hug, big smiles between him and Tony. So, honestly, if there's a culture issue, winning helps, and winning kind of papers over any of those things. If you're winning, you're not mad at each other. You're not sulking. And maybe they are appreciating each other. I guess, part of it is you don't have a choice. He's the manager. He's not going to get fired on a winning team unless something completely insane happens. So, is it because of him versus in spite of him? It might be both. It might be that he's kind of getting a new lease on life, being around a young, really talented baseball team that's probably a different culture than he had in St. Louis. And they're also getting something out of it because, look, I don't agree with every bullpen decision that I've seen, but then again, you can second guess a lot of bullpen decisions. So, when you listen to the broadcast, and by the way, I love the Sox broadcasters. It's a great team. Jason Benetti and Steve Stone, there's times where they're kind of tipping their cap. Tony's a master of using the bullpen. There's times where I don't know if I completely agree with that, but there are things that he does right. And there's things that, you sort of have to, that is definitely an art and not a science, managing those guys, keeping their confidence level up, making sure they're not over pitching. I do constantly worry that they're over pitching Liam Hendricks, but I feel like that guy would go pitch every day if you let him. So just as long as it's not, actually injuring him or causing anything bad, I love seeing him on the mound. He is loads of fun to watch. So I don't know. I'm glad I feel pleasantly surprised at this point. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, to piggyback off that, winning, as a ball player myself, there's always going to be conflicts in the dugout, in the clubhouse. There's going to be things that we hear that we're not going to agree with, things that we hear that, that we don't want to hear, but we need to hear them. Like Jim said, winning is going to, take away from a lot of that. I'll say for me personally, as a ball player myself, if my manager or my coach had thrown me under the bus at one point or throw my teammate under the bus unjustly with this style of baseball today, it's something that I'm going to be thinking about a little bit. It definitely, it's almost like you're telling a certain group of players to tone it down a little bit, to not have fun sometimes. I'm always going to, get on Tony about that pitching change because it was ridiculous to me for him to, kind of scold your mean Mercedes for that home run. There's a position player on the mound. What are you worried about? Are you worried about the pitcher's ERA? Are you worried about his whip? What are you upset about? They gave up. They gave up. We're talking about men who are, this is their livelihood. This is how they're making the money. This is what they're doing to pay the bills. I'm sorry. If there's someone throwing 47 miles per hour to me with a 3-0 count and we're up by 10, I'm swinging out of my shoes. I'm swinging. I'm going to let go of the bat. I'm going to swing so hard. Like, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's just like, hey, they gave up, so we're going to give up too. But I think Tony has done to this point with the White Sox, he has managed that team as best as he could. And going back to what Jim says, because I really love what Rick Renteria did for a lot of these players currently on this roster, really creating a culture of winning in that clubhouse. I love Liam Hendricks. I met Tim Anderson when we won the World Series at Oakland. I love the culture of the White Sox going forward. I don't want to see them tone it down because of an old school mentality going on. That's a team that plays with a lot of swag. That's a team that plays with a lot of flair. I don't want to see that toned down. I think Tony's done a good job, but I also think a lot of this goes to what's been set up for them in the past.
I when I was listening to you guys, I had so many thoughts flashing through my mind of the White Sox season. One was when you mentioned Jason Benetti and Steve Stone, the play-by-play announcers, Jim. About a week ago, I was watching the game, and they were getting blown out by Seattle. And I think the score was 8-1, and some guy got a single, and automatically Benetti and Stone went into the sell mode. You know, when an announcer goes, hey, this is basketball. They do it all the time. They're hanging around. It's a 20-point game. They cut it to 15. They're hanging around. They want to keep the audience there, right? And when they did that, you know, it was like the eighth inning. The Sox had a runner on first all of a sudden. Abreu coming up. Anything can happen. I'm like, why is this any different than Mercedes swinging in a 15-3 game in the eighth or seventh inning? It's like, what? Huh? Why is this a winnable game and the other one isn't? So I just think these unwritten rules are just bizarre, and half the time they're figments of people's imagination. I will say this.
Well, Ben, don't forget, Lance Lynn actually was – so here's a guy who has played for Tony before, and he's 34. He's been around a long time. He was the one, I think, who pitched that night. He won that game. He said, hey, if the Twins have a problem with this, don't put a position player on the mound.
Absolutely.
So I think it is fair for them to push back and say, like Miles just said, if they're quitting, like, they're still not 27 outs in the book yet. So, you know, you're still in the batter's box. What are you supposed to do?
I'm with Mercedes 100% on that one, and Lance Lynn. And I said this already when Miles and I already discussed this. My humble opinion, Tony was miffed because Mercedes missed his sign, didn't do what he told him to. That was an ego thing. But the part that I took away from it was after Tony threw his team under the bus, Miles, I've been thinking about this. The team reacted with just utter indifference. You know, it reminded me of my days as a coach. I would tell the kids, we're going to do it this way. And you see this ear? You see that ear? It goes in that ear, and it goes out that ear. And then the next thing you know, we're at Wendy's celebrating another loss. And so what I'm saying is that in other words, there's no accountability. You know, you win, you lose. Let's go to Wendy's no matter what. But what I'm saying is that they're like, kids listen to an old man. And they go, oh, that guy, he sounds like my grandfather or my uncle. And yeah, I love him, you know, and God bless him, he's around. But I'm not, I don't have to listen to him. And to Tony's credit, nobody got punished, quote unquote, in my humble opinion. He didn't bench players for disagreeing with him. Like in the old days, way before either one of you, the Cubs had a manager named Leo DeRocher, who was old school. He was the one who coined the phrase, nice guys finish last. He would punish players who disagreed with him. They would be benched. He didn't like Ernie Banks. He would like undercut Ernie Banks because he thought that Ernie was too nice. And so my attitude about it is that the players have – you know what? I think Jim is right. I think they actually liked Tony La Russa. They thought it was cool when he won and became the manager with the second most wins in baseball. They all hugged him. And so I'm going with, I can't remember which. Sorry, Normie Cap. You were all yelling. Who knows what who was saying? But I'm with the guy who said they're winning because of him. I think he's done an outstanding job. All right. So having said that, Jim Coogan, the Sox are clearly buyers. So in your humble opinion, as the owner of a fantasy baseball team and who could easily step in and replace Rick Hahn as general manager of the White Sox, who's obtainable for the Chicago White Sox that would really help them in the second half of the season?
Well, obviously up to this point, there was a big concern about outfield depth, and then suddenly in the last 2 weeks there's the developments with respect to the pectoral tear that Eloy Jimenez suffered and Luis Roberts grade 3, which I think is about as severe a hip flexor strain as you can have. Means I think he had to have had surgery to fix that. They said he was cleared to resume training and rehabilitation baseball activities. So, and Jimenez, as I think you touched on, was what he said. He said he feels like he's 200%. So the articles in the last couple of days are other people observing him and that he's basically almost ready to go. So you combine that with the fact that they've already got I think, an underrated guy in Adam Engel, who's a great defensive outfielder. And Robert, you know, I think he'll be a great hitter. It looks like he's, I mean, he's just so strong. He's so physically gifted. But defensively, he's just unbelievable. If he's coming back to his full strength, you know, you could have two duds playing in right and left field, and he's going to cover the whole thing himself. It's just kind of, it's ridiculous. Well, especially given that he's like the size of a tight end, and he patrols that much space. It's really remarkable. So to start out, to answer your question, I think they're okay in the outfield, especially with all the contributions they've gotten from Hamilton. I mean, they're so confident about the way Andrew Vaughn is playing out there that they actually designated Adam Eaton for assignment, who, you know, he was a White Sox player before. He's had some good seasons. Seems like he just can't hit anymore. So they feel so good about the guys that they have. And by the way, just on the question of what do they need, it's amazing how well their rookies have adapted to the major leagues this season. I mean, Leury Garcia is not a rookie. He's their utility guy who's been around before. He got hurt last season and missed the playoffs. But Vaughn and Collins are making great contributions. Mednick, they brought up, I can't remember, Gavin Sheets, I think, plays first base, but might also have been in the outfield at least once. They're all hitting competently. They're not tearing the cover off the ball, but it's a lineup that's just deep as a consequence. So if anything, I'm sure Rick Hahn is feeling two things. One, very lucky and very fortunate to say, wow, these guys, we believed in these guys and they're actually producing, and they're making a major league transition on a competing team in the middle of the season. But I'm sure he's also thinking some of these guys are less than 100 plate appearances in their career. So who knows how this is going to go? I'm sure he still has his eye on things. There's the Pittsburgh Pirates player, Frazier, is one of the target guys that all the baseball people have been talking about, because he's a good hitter. He can play second base. They lost Madrigal to a season. I mean, contrasting to Robert and Jimenez, Madrigal's not coming back. So, you know, Mednick is filled in very well at second base. I mean, there's mistakes that he's made there. He's had a couple of ugly plays, but he's had some big hits, and he's had some nice plays as well. So they can juggle all these guys for a while. I have a feeling that the team is probably just kind of waiting to see how things look in another month. Because, I mean, it's possible that Jimenez has a setback or Robert has a setback, and now you're looking for something else, or you're rolling the dice on the other kind of second string outfielders that they've been playing. But, you know, the thing with sports, if you're smart, and I think Rick Hahn is tremendous. I was really excited when the Sox hired him, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, something like that now, 8 years ago. You know that your windows are not to be taken for granted. So as good as this starting pitching staff has been, they know they have to do something to just at least make sure they covered all their bases. Sorry for the pun. Going into the trade deadline. So Frazier's an option. I'm sure they're going to look at some secondary guys. I don't know if they're going to look at – I don't think you need anybody in the rotation, because you're lucky enough to have – you know, Michael Kopech could be a great starter someday. He's had a couple swing starts this season. I think he's healthy right now. He came back off the DL. He looked tremendous. Like, he's really changed as a pitcher when he pitched before he got hurt about a month ago. So – you know, the bullpen arm thing is always there. Maybe they want to get Craig Kimbrell. I don't know. I mean, I'd be fine with it. The Sox bullpen is pretty good. They have a great closer, but you always need more arms out there. Guys get hurt. Guys get cold. Guys lose their confidence. All of a sudden, they can't find the strike zone. You always want more bullpen arms. And like you said, Ben, the playoffs, I mean, I was very critical of Joe Maddon back in 2016. Luckily, it all worked. But, man, I think if he could pitch Aroldis Chapman like 3 innings a game in the World Series, he would have. But you can't do that with guys that throw 100 miles an hour and they're used to throwing about 25, 35 pitches in a game. So, and then having a day off, ideally. But I'm sure that Frazier's a target. I don't know what else the team needs. It's kind of crazy that they've weathered these injuries. Yasmani Grandal's out now. It could be a while. Zach Collins looks like he's competent behind the plate, but I don't know where you're going to find a catcher, you know, who's like a guy that you would trust to be your playoff catcher. So that gets a little tricky. Unless there's a veteran that I'm not thinking of on a team that's not competing, that he really has nothing else to do with himself. that's a possible target too, if there's somebody out there like that. I'm not sure who it is, but it's really something. It's good. At least it's good that they're in the position they're in. They haven't suffered for all of the position player injuries that have come up. And it's amazing. I never thought Billy Hamilton could hit. And he's sort of hitting. So
yeah, he's sort of hitting.
It's nuts. And last year they were like, to me, they were super fun to watch in that abbreviated season, and it just carried over. So the other good thing is they have other guys, even now, even though they've called up Berger, in the minors that they could use as ammunition if they want to do something. So the options are still there.
By the way, one name you left off, I gotta give a shout out to, he may be my favorite White Sox right now. He's just stood the test of time, and he just hasn't quit. Brian Goodwin, and this is a guy that's bounced around from one team to the other. He's always getting a bad break, and the White Sox brought him up, I want to say, in June. I've lost track of time this summer, and he's just been steady. You know, I mean, he's by 250 or something. I'm not saying he's tearing the league apart, but I just love the way he approaches the game and how he's kept himself positive through all those years, and now there's in the major league, and I hope he gets to be a starter in the World Series. That would be awesome. Miles, what do you think? Who do you think the White Sox should go for?
It's really interesting with the White Sox, because I feel like they're so deep when it comes to just everything that they have in their arsenal. I personally, when I look at that roster, I don't know if they should really pursue any big names. I think there's a lot of talent that's going to come off of the injured list. Specifically when I'm looking at Luis Robert, when I'm looking at Eloy Jimenez, and, you know, it's very unfortunate with Yasmani Grandal. I love the Sox depth. I really love what they have. I'm a big advocate for Lucas Giolito. I'm a big advocate for Dallas Keuchel, even though he made comments about the Cubs a few years ago, but that's not the point I'm trying to make.
not that you remember anything.
No, not that I remember anything. I like Carlos Rodon. I really like what the Sox have in their arsenal right now. And you know, they're not just getting by with what they have. They're dominating with, you know, with the players who, you know, aren't the everyday players that we're used to watching the Sox have. I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, that they have to really go get anybody. I think just, you know, keep maintaining what you're doing in your division right now. You know, from now until, you know, all these injuries start to subside and players are starting to slowly come back. I really am not worried about the Sox in terms of picking up anybody else.
Yeah, I worry about the Sox actually doing something as foolish as trading one of the greatest shortstops in baseball for a mediocre pitcher, which they did about 5 years ago, and I still haven't quite got over.
Yeah.
And I know Miles knows exactly what I'm talking about. I think Jim has buried that memory and will not confront it.
He's actually on my fantasy baseball team too. It's a bad team, but he's having a tremendous – Marcus Semien you're talking about. He's having a great season. He's a huge piece of the Blue Jays. He's great. I do actually try to bury that, because what a stupid trade. Good God.
What I was talking about, Tatis. That's who I was talking about.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Simeon's like also an MVP level player this season.
Yeah. But see, that's the problem. That's the thing. The Cubs did the same thing with Chapman to get Chapman. They gave the Yankees two good players, and then Chapman's here for what, a year, two, and then he's back with the Yankees. So it's like I don't even know if it's worth it. I mean, somebody should do a study to see if it's actually ever proved to be worth it. That 1 year, that one championship year that you get, is it worth 10 years of misery? I don't know about that.
Weren't Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez part of the trade for which bad White Sox pitcher was it?
Yeah, it was. He wasn't bad. I'm blanking on his name. I could see him.
Oh no, it wasn't bad. No, it was.
Yeah, he was. I'm blanking on his name.
He's had a bad time since then, and basically kind of washed out since he went to the Cubs.
But yes. That's my favorite. That's my favorite example, because I was at the game with Miles' dad, who's a diehard Cubs fan, and we were at a Cubs White Sox game, and Jimenez came up and hit a home run. And that ball is still falling somewhere. And I'm sitting next to this diehard Cub fan. And I go, it's too bad you traded him to the White Sox. All right, we'll close with this. I do believe that Tony La Russa was wrong with the way he treated Mercedes. I do believe that Mercedes' batting average fell. As I don't know what correlation there is to it, but he was never really the same since that home run. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe the pitchers got used to him. Whatever. Who knows? But he's not on the team right now. He's in the minors, and I really liked him a lot. I thought he was a great character having the team. So we'll close with this. We'll get predictions. Will Mercedes be back with the Chicago White Sox before the season's over? And if so, will he be on the playoff roster? We're going to go. We're going to start with our White Sox expert, Jim Coogan. Your prediction.
Well, if the White Sox decide to stick with the catching depth that they have right now, if he's going to have a position, you mean Mercedes does catch. I have to assume they're not confident in his catching abilities or he'd be back up right now with Grandal's injury. But if they decide not to go get anybody, they may want him around as a DH / third catcher, including on a playoff roster, because you don't just need depth, you need multi-positional depth so that you have flexibility to plug guys in, because you never know if Zach Collins is the starter by then, you never know when something's going to happen to him. And I think Seve something or other, I can't remember his last name, the guy they just called up last week, is there Seve Sabala, I think, is the other, that's now their backup catcher, who's new. I haven't gotten a chance to really get to know him just yet. So that's one reason why I think the answer is probably yes. I think it's going to depend on, look, he's probably working on whatever happened to his swing. If it's LaRusso related, then I guess he'll have a little break from that and maybe he'll get his groove back. And but if they don't feel good about where his bat is at, you're not going to see him back. So, with the minor leagues back at full swing this year, and I know they've been modified, but there's games happening. At least they can find out. Last year it would have been more complicated because nobody was playing other than the major league teams. So I think between the catching question and because if he's got a bat, you always need another bat. And then it'll just depend on how they shuffle around with the Brian Goodwins and the Hamiltons and the Vaughns when and if you've got Robert. And if it's Robert Engel and Jimenez every day in the outfield, then you just have a question of how many guys are on that roster, just running out of slots. But I did enjoy watching him too. I think it's fun. I think he's fun. And when he has his swag, which he lost, but if he gets it back, he's a fun player to watch. And I think the rest of the team loves him. So that's why I think it would certainly, they would have no problem with it if he becomes part of the team in August or September.
I sure hope so. Miles, we'll let you close it down.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think one of the big questions with him, and did this benefit the White Sox with having the DH in the AL? Really, being Mercedes defensively isn't all that great, and the Sox are so deep when it comes to each position, like Jim was talking about. Yeah, it really comes down to his bat for the playoffs. He could be another catcher spot, but I think his bread and butter is really just his bat. Maybe at first base here and there. How well is he going to hit in the minors? What is he going to improve? Is he going to start recognizing pitches better? Is he going to start swinging at pitches that are for him and not chasing stuff out of the zone? I really just think it's so much personal development and confidence that he has to gain back just from the amazing start that he had and a bit of a drop off there, which I think, he was still batting. I think it was 271 or something by the time he was sent down. I think that shows how well he was hitting and his potential of what he can do with his bat. So I think just getting that confidence back and staying within himself as a hitter and knowing who he is as a player, that's going to be a big determining factor for the White Sox to call him back up, because depth-wise at each position, I think the Sox are set. But I think, when he's down in AAA, he really has to prove himself as a hitter.
I really hope he comes back. That guy, he could be to the Sox what Schwarber was the Cubs. When Schwarber returned to the lineup after being out for a whole year, he has that. He kind of reminds me of Schwarber. He's like, I think LaRusso's biggest mistake was the way he publicly, I don't know, say humiliated, because that's a strong word, but disrespected him. By the way, Jose Quintana, That was the play. I can't believe I forgot that. That was Quintana, the pitcher. Right. I can't believe I forgot that. That was the pitcher. And he did.
Me too. I loved him when he was on the White Sox.
Yeah, he was a good pitcher. So
I liked him on the Cubs, his first few starts on the Cubs. I liked him. I liked him for a bit.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's not like, look, Jimenez is all potential. He's not really done it. You know what I'm saying? We're all talking about, wow, we can't wait. Well, we don't really know. I mean, be fair, guys. He got injured. You know, he played 1 year. Last year was not even a full season. So we really don't know what Jimenez's potential is. So I would say that was one of those trades that, the Cubs shouldn't feel that bad about. It's just that it's so painful for him to come back to Wrigley Field and hit a ball that still, as I said, hasn't landed yet. All right, gentlemen, it's a blast. I love talking baseball, and you guys are a lot of fun to talk baseball with. So Jim Coogan and Miles Porter, thank you very much for taking the time to talk baseball with me, okay?
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Benny J.
All right, that's very good. That's Jim, that's Miles. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.